want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 355, recorded live on June 11th, 2014. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Daryl W4 and
Scott Burks.
You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com. Go find it. Yes, we were stepping down in the pre-show here with memory lane of all the different types of computers and gaming systems that we had. Definitely showing our age, depending on which system was one of your first.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, once a geek, always a geek. And video games, I don't know about you guys, the ones that you're doing nowadays, but Elder Scrolls Online has me hook, line, and sinker. I've just been
Is there anything other than location-based games? I don't even know.
Right. I know. I called Daryl on the phone yesterday. He's playing a game. I'm like, really, dude?
Yeah, I was out playing Ingress.
Now, you're on, like, level 84 now?
No, I'm still only level 9.
Did they just completely take off the max now, or did they get
no,
a new max?
No, you can now go through level 16, but levels 9 through 16 are different than leveling up to 8. So now you have to do certain levels of badges. So it's not just as easy as get AP and level up, and it's not that exponential increase in AP. So like to go from 9 to 10, I think you have to have 4 million AP, but 4 bronze badges, and I don't remember.
Yes.
I'm not that big into the game. But the thing that I like about Ingress is it has that repeatability, so I can go walk around in the local city, the little small city, and it gets my step count in.
Wow. Fascinating.
So,
Yeah. Yeah, I knew you'd be all over that, Scott.
How many years per level do you need to play continuously to get from level to level?
You know, there are some people that I've heard of in this area.
I've heard some 12-year-olds are just going to kick your butt, but...
Oh, absolutely. One of the guys that I played with early on got his son into it. His son was, like, level 8 by the time, you know, I would have been, like level 3.
Wow. And some of us have lives, but that's okay. That's good.
Right? And women.
And women. In our lives. Yes, and not living in your parents' basement. It's good.
You're going to hear... Daryl, did you take out the garbage?
Mom, I'll get in a minute.
Yeah. But we digress. Holy smokes. We do a show on that.
I think that's a little more than digression. I think that's really off the rails.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. Brings back memories. And that was just like a week ago. Let's see. Stuff we've done this week that actually is geocaching related. Cool stuff. I had talked a couple of weeks ago about being on the Gadget Professor, doing my 15-minute elevator speech about geocaching, and that is now live. If you go to geosnippets.com, you can go and actually see the video and listen to the audio, depending on what you want to do. It's actually a good listen, and not just because I say it out because it's about me. But it's actually a fairly decent interview, and if you want to have people understand geocaching, and that was the whole premise with this, is there's a huge wide tech audience out there that the Gadget Professor has to be able to introduce geocaching to. That was really, to me, a really cool opportunity. So geosnippets.com if you want to go check that out. And of course, WWFM 11 had a lot of fun with that, and I'm sure everybody's got their WWFM, if you did it, stories. Did a vlog on mine, and that's out there at YouTube as well, so be sure to check that out. Daryl, how about you? What'd you end up doing?
Well, I did a couple of the flash mobs as well. The second one especially. Yeah, we got there about like 10 minutes early, and everyone's already standing around just talking. It's, you know, people understand the mob part, but they weren't getting the flash part.
Yeah, the inconspicuous right? part was just not working.
No. Yeah, yeah. And it was in the mall parking lot, and they're talking with the security guard and everything. It's like, yeah, okay. This is what flash mobs are for, is everyone descends at one point, not, you know, 10, 15 minutes ahead of time.
And no, I heard that happens everywhere. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, come on, it's geocachers. We're there to, you know, to chat with other geocachers, not so much to do the flash mob.
Yeah. Right. And that's what we do. All we need is a place to talk, and that's it.
Exactly.
Awesome. Scott, how about yourself?
As long as we're plugging, I was just recently on the OB podcast. They did an interview with me.
Yes, you were.
On Sunday. And then, I did the flash mob thing. We went to a park, and it was there. Had a good time. And that's really about it. Didn't do too much caching. I did some caching in my hometown over the weekend. I only had the kids one night last weekend, so went to my hometown and did some caching.
What's the blurb about Groundhog's Day?
Oh, yeah, we went on Sunday. I was out in Woodstock, and we did some caching out there at Woodstock, Illinois, and that's where they filmed Groundhog's Day.
Oh, I did not know that.
The movie. Yeah, in Woodstock, Illinois. So went to the town, you know, the town center where he keeps going to all the time, saw that and all that. Had a good time. It was good.
Awesome. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful day. So. Good stuff. All right, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. What's coming up this week on GeoGearheads, Daryl?
Well, this week we're doing our Events 1 show, and we're going to feature the Waysiders, hosts of the Going Caching events, a really exciting series of events that are now mega status on their own.
Wow, that sounds great. And on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, wife Amy and I, we're going to try to work it out. We've got everybody coming in to North Kakalaki for my daughter Amanda's high school graduation, and everybody's showing up on Thursday. So we are going to try to sneak in a podcast in between the people coming in and out of the house. It might be a noisy podcast, but it's going to be a good podcast. We're going to be talking about multi-caches and puzzle caches, and go over some tutorial goodness when it comes to that. All right, let's move on to the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day. Hey, cachers. I'm Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, I've been caching since 2002, and I've been in the business of geocaching since 2005. Monday through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, have you ever found a geocache that was underwater? Well, after tallying all the answers, a full two-thirds, or just over 66% of cachers, have found a cache that was underwater. Well, here's what we heard. Project Faye on Twitter shared, if in a tall metal pole that you had to have a magnet to retrieve, yes. Well, that counts in my book. The cache was submerged in water. Terrell, too, also on Twitter, said, well, yes, but it was connected to a chain at the end of a dock. Dave Self on Google+ shared, yes, accessible from the surface and tethered to a buoy. And Brian on Facebook shared, yes, had to find a small buoy in the middle of the lily pads. The cache was anchored to the bottom of the lake with weights. Well, we have snorkeled for caches like this a few years ago back on the Snake River, and unfortunately the river current was stronger than the weights, so the cache moved about 100 feet downstream in a day, and then it was gone. I believe it's since been archived. Well, hey, we really enjoyed hearing about geocaches found underwater, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Thanks, and happy caching.
Yeah, I believe that one's now a locationless cache heading down the Mississippi. But hey, that's how it goes. And yeah, that just tells you research, research, research before you place that geocache.
Absolutely.
Awesomely cool stuff. All right, episode 355, Geocaches We Wish We Could Hide. And this was really a cool concept. I think Daryl actually came up with this one, or was that from a fan, Daryl, that came up
with it? No, that was actually one that I came up with just before showtime a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's really, it's a cool idea, kind of a devil's advocate, I look at it this way when it comes to it. The idea is this: what kind of geocaches that right now are not allowed by Groundspeak, and we'll kind of stick with that because I'm sure we've got variances on some of the other listing boards that are out here. So let's just say with Groundspeak in general, that they do not allow to have, but we sure wish we could put out and hide those type of geocaches and what they would be. So we've got a couple ideas out here. Do you guys have, I'm looking at the show notes. I see what I've got. Do you guys got some ideas of what you kind of geocaches you'd like to do?
Every challenge I've ever been denied on.
Okay,
my reviewer keeps denying me on the challenge caches I tried putting in.
What would be a good example?
I tried to last. No, I'm sorry. 2 years ago, I tried to put 100 FTFs total. Just 100 FTFs. You have to. No, I'm sorry. It was not 100. I'm sorry. I'm lying. It was an FTF a month. For 12 months. So it was like, but you didn't have to go consecutive or anything. You said they have an FTF in January, FTF in February, FTF in March, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you met that, you can find the cash. They wouldn't let me do it.
Wow. Do they give any reason?
No, because FTF is not a stat, I think, and that changes. It changes the way you cash is the technical term.
Well, not the people I know that go geocaching. The first FTF hounds that are
I didn't make it consecutive. I didn't make it in a year. You could do it as long as you got an FTF in each of the 12 months. You can get the challenge.
Yeah, it'd just be like a fuzzy challenger to the rest of them, where you just fill out a grid.
I know. Agreed. Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, I think some of those rules have slacked off, so you might want to check with the reviewer again, see if it would actually get through now.
Well, they just denied me my 13 icon one too. That just got denied for me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. That's one I've seen before.
My reviewer said the most that they'll do is 9.
Really?
That's about all you can do in a day. Yeah. I go, I've done 13 in a day.
I was going to say.
I disagree with that. You know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, is there an actual list somewhere of all the different challenges that are available?
Yeah, there is a bookmark list. I obviously don't have it in front of me. But there is a bookmark list. I don't know where it is. I've seen it before, though. I know it exists.
Because that would be cool. I mean, check the ones that are on Groundspeak, where we talk a lot about in general. But if there's a list of other types, because I think you guys have mentioned other state, local ones.
Yeah, I think there's a monster list that's broken down by states, too, as well. Because whenever I'd say, did you have any? Because a couple of my challenge caches, not all of them, but most of them have, I'm on that list. You know, so. If you could look at your bookmarks in your right-hand column,
right.
I could see I'm on that list.
Wow.
Under the eyes for Illinois, obviously.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and one of the things to remember with any of those kind of challenge caches is just because someone else got it approved doesn't mean that you're going to get it approved.
No.
There's some of them that are grandfathered in because the rules have changed since they were placed, and there's others that reviewer just had a different interpretation of the rules than your reviewer might. So yeah, a lot of that is open to the reviewer's interpretation.
Yeah, because my reviewer said 9, but I have a 10 icon day challenge out there that's out. But that came out, you know, two, three years ago I put it out.
Wow.
But today it wouldn't have been allowed. They wouldn't have even allowed it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and some of that is in response to complaints and whatnot that Groundspeak gets. So they are constantly changing those guidelines and... Yeah, you know, a lot of that is just in notes to the reviewers. It's not actually published anywhere. So you really do need to talk with the reviewer before you're going to be doing a challenge cache.
So would somebody be saying, it's too hard, I can't do that, why do you have this on here?
I know, yeah. The reviewer said, like, the problem with that, and I see the point, but I made it so you could do it, you know, you didn't have to, you know, you could do it whenever you wanted. You could have done it in the past. But they're like, if you're an old cacher like me, you know, for an example, getting 13 in a day is very difficult because, you know, there's no, you know, webcams near me or anything like that anymore. So if you've been caching for you know, 6-7 years, there's no webcams. The theory is there's no webcams in your area. But my thought is, well, You go out of state all the time. I mean, it is possible.
Yes.
It's just it's Groundspeak's getting way too watered down and getting way too
vanilla,
for lack of a better term, P-fied. You know,
yeah.
In terms of like it's a challenge. That's the whole point of it. It's a challenge, Cash.
Yeah.
You know,
you're gonna have extremes. Why not allow it? So go
right,
for
there's
it.
So many weak challenge caches and easy challenge caches out there that's not even a challenge. You know, it's like I don't know. It's
well, if it's one of those things where if I've geocached for X number of years and I automatically qualify for 6 different challenges just on the geocaches I found, that's not a challenge.
Right. Right. It's too easy. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, I got it. Yay. But it's not something that I'm going to go, wow, I really want to go and beat this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to something else. That's great about challenges, though. I really – that's a cool thing to go over. One of the ones that I would really like to do that would be awesome would be indoor geocaches, to allow indoor geocaches. Now, the technology's not there yet.
No, it never happened. You need to have a I mean, technically – oh, sorry, Dale. Go ahead.
The one that I had denied – is simply go in and ask for the cash container, and they'd give it to you in a business, and that's not allowed. You know, they will grant exceptions.
Now, there wasn't for libraries.
Well, it hasn't actually been allowed for a long time.
Well, I've done one. I've done one of those.
Yeah, I've done the caches like that, but they're either granted exceptions, like if you're doing something at like a nature center, sometimes they'll grant a special exemption for that. Oh. But the one that I wanted to do was actually the first of the the Midwest Geo Bashes in Indiana was near this tiny itty bitty little town that had this really awesome pizza place, where the owner's grandfather or father, I can't remember which, probably would have been grandfather though, had been a 6-year-old boy on the Titanic and was one of the survivors.
Wow.
So he had kind of turned his little, awesome little old shop into this great little pizza shop with a whole bunch of Titanic
history
memorabilia, as it were.
Yeah.
So it was like this little Titanic museum. The guy loved to talk with you. Just absolutely great food, too. So we tried to turn that into a cache, you know, gave the guy the container with the logbook and everything. He's like, oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Right.
Talked with a reviewer. No, sorry, can't do it. Nope.
Now,
not a possibility.
Is that because it's in a business?
Yeah, it was in a business.
But if you don't mention the business...
It didn't matter. Because you had to go into the business, it was not allowed.
Well, there's one in Milwaukee that you have to ask the bartender to get it. It's
a
bar.
Yeah,
it's in a bar.
There's quite a few of those.
Yeah, because I know hotels that I've had. Matter of fact, the one in... where was it? I think it was Pennsylvania. The hotel in there had a geocache right in their main
You're
bar
talking
area.
At... I can't remember. It was the GeoCoin Fest, though. That was a special exemption that was granted for that one because that was the hotel that hosted the GeoCoin Fest.
And I thought it was actually a different hotel that had it inside that you had to go. And I've lost count of how many libraries that I've gone to that have had...
libraries are one of the ones that they'll generally grant the exemptions mm-hmm. on still.
Yeah.
But there are some that were placed before the locations were added in for the finals on puzzle caches. And this is where you'll see them most of the time, is the puzzles or the multis mm-hmm. before you had to submit all those waypoints.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's like that in the Mall of America. There, you know, there's a whole bunch of them, but the ones at the bars, someone had done a multi-cache series where you had to go basically drinking around the local brew pubs. And
run?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the final one has the cache
the
container cache. That you have to sign. So,
yeah,
you know,
sign the log thud.
Like
I did a letterbox inside the mall I grew up in. And if you go to the cache page, it has a map you have to download. And you have to go from, you know, you have to look at the logos and, like, follow the trail and then you go to the water fountain and you count numbers of things, but then I had to end it. I couldn't end it. I had to use a waypoint at the end because, you know, you have to use your GPS for something,
right?
So I had to do a waypoint at the end of it, so it's in the parking lot, you know, under a lamp skirt. But so there are they can be done. I don't know if that would even be allowed here, allowed now to do that anymore. But
see, if it's a letterbox, you could and the final is actually away from the building. Yeah, you could probably get away with it.
It's outside. You got to do project a waypoint.
Because the ones that I've done have actually been inside.
Anything that they're requiring you to go inside to a business is not going to be allowed unless it's something like the hotel or conference center that's hosting an event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, see, what I would love to have, because I know a lot of hospitals use this technology for keeping and monitoring the different equipment and the nurses and where everybody's at. It deals with some of the stuff that I'm actually looking for right now for employment that that deal with this. They use radio and radio waves for that. And I would love to have a smartphone that would be able to also pick up and work like a GPS using radio as well to be able to pinpoint and make an indoor GPS unit.
Oh, they have them. That's not that big a deal. If you go to a lot of the conferences, they'll have an app that actually uses that technology that it's just using Wi-Fi, but now that you have the iBeacon, which is not Apple, it's an open standard.
Right.
You can actually use the iBeacon to locate, but I don't see where Groundspeak would even allow that because it requires that you have a smartphone.
Yeah. And technology, I mean, come on, we know how technology is sliding right now until the next thing that comes along. And smartphones are definitely, I would say without worrying about debate, are pretty much the majority now where it comes to how geocachers work in general.
Well, I would say but definitely with the new cachers, yeah. I would say, I think us old schoolers, still use.
Oh, absolutely. GPS, I've got, a bunch of them, but it's one of those things where how technology changes, things need to change as well. And if they're still working with physical containers, if you still get permission and you're still able to work that through, the only stipulations that stopping is the business aspect.
Right. Yeah.
That would be something.
They don't want right now those indoor caches. If you're in a mall, you're not going to be able to do it. They don't want them near train stations for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So that would be out. There's all kinds of reasons that you wouldn't be able to do it indoors aside from the location aspect. But they don't want you to be required to have that. And here in the U.S. and Canada, smartphones are prevalent. That's not true in many other parts of the world, though.
Okay. But things change over time, so it's like...
Things do change, and they may change those rules, especially as some of this technology actually gets built into the OS level. Right now, this is mostly stuff that's handled by a third-party app.
Yeah. It'd be interesting, but again, we're playing devil's advocate, so it's part of the fun of things that we have on our wish list.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, how about this? Now, I will really love to get into buried caches.
Ah, yes.
You can't do that.
Okay.
Well, I don't want a cache that's necessarily buried. I just want to be able to take a cache, dig a hole, and put the cache in so it's still exposed, but digging a hole is not allowed.
Right. And again, that's the whole premise of tonight's show is if we could. And I'll give you an example of one that the Girl Scouts put out not too long ago that obviously raised an eyebrow the second that you saw it. There was a series. It was given in permission in front of a YMCA, and there were patio stones that led from the sidewalk over to like where a picnic table is. And when you go along, it wasn't even the patio stones you stepped on. There was this gravel combination of patio stones and other things that were like side shoulders for the pathway. One of the patio stones, they had dug a hole, put a half of a – well, actually, it was the entire lock and lock box that fit perfectly in the hole, and then put the patio stone on top of it. So technically, that's not legal because you used a tool to dig a hole to actually place the geocache in that nice flat contoured spot. Mm-hmm. So that's a no-no. But that's technically a buried geocache.
I mean, I've seen a preform sticking into the ground with just its cap sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a buried? I mean, did it, shoved it into the ground? Is that a technically a buried cache.
And that gets into the controversy. Yes, if a tool was used. But what's
the difference? There's also one of the... What? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm saying the big debate that's normally put with that is I found a hole in the woods that fit a geocache, and I put something on over the geocache to hide it. What's the diff?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, there's one in like Lake Forest, Illinois, that it's an ammo can. There's a hole, an ammo can, and a piece of wood on top of it. I mean, that's...
That's actually an interesting point, though, Andy, because I have a cache where it's, you know, we found this nice big bowl in the forest, threw our cache in there, put some wood over it to hide it, you know, typical pile of sticks kind of thing. Went back, found it like last summer. The ground has now filled in perfectly around it.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. So what's the difference between that and a hole? You know, is someone going to accuse me of digging a hole? You know, no, it
was
the ground filled in through erosion.
I just can't add a shovel to my caching bag, dude. It's not going to happen.
No. Well, but it is still accessible, you know, with you move the sticks off and it's there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know, but like you can't do buried. I mean, you can't.
No, buried, you know, if you have to dig for it, it's going to be a problem. And that's the whole reason
why they do that.
You can't have the buried caches.
Right.
But you like have that gray
well, let's
say, area.
Well, let's rephrase that. It can't be like 2 feet down. I mean, what if it's already a hole and you're putting it in the hole?
Yeah, but the problem is what happens if that gets buried and you've got someone running around with like a little garden spade digging up someone's lawn looking for that cache.
That never happens.
So even if there's a hole in the ground, you still shouldn't put a cache there is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I've done it. I will probably continue to do it. But
you're guilty
you're
of it,
that,
though,
it's the gray area. That's
if you're
going to
do
this.
That... You have to be aware of the surroundings and make sure that it's not going to be a situation where it could be misconstrued.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, if you look at all your water sprinkler, all your PVC pipe with the tops to them, there are so many that are out there where somebody said, well, I didn't use a tool, I just kind of pushed it in.
Right, yeah. I mean, technically, if you're not putting the... If you're not putting the dirt on top of it, you're okay. If you're just putting like sticks and stuff there, then you're okay. If it's actually putting I think the dirt on top of the geocache.
Yeah, if there's dirt on top of the cache, you're in trouble, period.
Yeah. 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 And then this debate will go on, and again, that's what's half the fun of devil advocate is to be able to talk about stuff.
And like I've seen where some of the park systems will actually partially bury the cache too. You know, but that's a little different because that's the park system that's done it. It's their land.
Yes.
And that's really where a lot of that rule comes from, is they don't want people digging up the parkland and not getting the permission to do that. You know, you might go and say, hey, I want to hide a geocache. Is that okay? But neglect to tell them, and I'm going to dig up, you know, for this 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the PVC pipe one where you got to pour water in to make the cache fold up to do something. Like, they had to put that in.
Well, I see. Yeah, the white PVC pipes. I just found one over the weekend. It was flush against the ground.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Meh. So it's a great debate, and you know what? That's the fun of talking about things like that. Let's get a little out of the box with something like this. I am a huge fan of augmented reality because I want to live in it.
Don't that, you already?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, when people look at me, where's he gone? He's gone. Bye bye. That's all right. Having, and I know Daryl and I have had interesting opinions on this. When you get into Google Glass and some of these other things with your smartphones that you're able to do now with augmented reality, I would love to have the technology to be able to have a physical container someplace. As you're approaching said container, a couple of things can happen. One, for example, if you have a backstory for that particular geocache, I would love to be able to walk along a path and have the theme of whatever that geocache backstory is. So if you're doing a night cache in a graveyard, and it's not actually in a graveyard, it's just in a spooky part of the woods, to be able to have some kind of augmented reality where you got ghosts flying by, you've got the spooky graphics that involved in it, as you come up to the geocache, some type of guardian sitting above it. I would love to have the technology to be able to do that. Is that still geocaching?
Well, that's exactly what Warigos were supposed to be trying to accomplish, but you know, at a much more primitive level.
Yeah, because I would love to have a large ammo box someplace, and as you look off the distance, you see a red dragon sitting above it, something like that. And you can actually get into it where you can actually incorporate some form of whatever, a battle, a fight. You know, I mean, the technology eventually is going to be there to not necessarily enhance geocaching, but to make the experience for a geocache. If you're going to put that much time in to make that kind of a visual experience, and you know down the road they're going to have an interface that you're going to be able to do it relatively easily, I would think that would be freaking awesome.
Well, they check do somewhat. Out,
check ahead, out Intercaching, and of course you already know about Warigo. Both of those can do much of this kind of stuff already. It's just not going to allow you to do the overlays like what you really wanted to be able to do with the augmented reality. And what you're talking about is the more traditional augmented reality, not like the Ingress type of augmented reality. You actually right. want to overlay the graphics into the real life, not just overlay the game into real life.
Right. I want to be able to sit there and look and have it say, okay, you're 100 feet from the geocache. So this is going to make your Dragon Guardian look X big. And it might have a glowing effect around it or something like that, so that as you're getting closer to ground zero, that nerd. Yay, what can I say? I think it would be awesome for things like that, just to make an interesting experience for stuff. It's like having your own mini movies. They're getting there now.
I'll tell you, I don't want to try to develop that, though.
Oh. Well, you know, it's funny that, you know, they do have the audio ones where, you know, you listen to audio and then, you know, you turn as... Actually, what's funny is at my previous podcast, Chicago Geocache Podcast, we toyed with the idea of doing one of those where you actually... We do a show and then, you know, if you time it right, you know, at the 20-minute mark, you go, okay, sorry, hold on, well, take a left, guys, and then continue on with the show. So you could actually listen to the show the entire way to the cache. Of course, never got around to doing it. It's a ton of work. But I have done a couple different audio caches, and they were great. You know, they're really cool. When they work, they're really, really cool.
It's basically a letterbox, but using audio cues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which are really cool.
I've heard, I've never actually done one. I've heard them do that. I know other podcasters have talked about ones that they've gone on. And yeah, I think that's awesome. Anything that would give the mood of the thing. Now, theirs was more historic, which gave a lot of back feed and a lot of back information about the areas that they were going. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, there's two or three in Chicago. I know that. I've done two. I think there's one more I haven't done yet.
Wow.
Well, and don't forget that for a little while, Groundspeak didn't allow those either.
Really? Do they?
Yeah.
I don't even. Well, they're both of them are really old. I don't even know if they still allow it anymore or not.
No, they allow it again, but you have to certify that it's free from malware, basically. The whole thing was that people started inserting viruses into files that you wouldn't think would have supported viruses. So anything you had to download, they wanted, you know, they didn't want any association with any of those viruses.
Sure. There's always the bad apples that go to try to mess up things with that. And I think the more digital things happen, the more that's going to happen too. Unfortunately. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, a half hour has evaporated, and that was just a fantastically fun subject to go over. All right, any final thoughts about that before we head on, gentlemen? All right.
I want my challenge catch icon.
All right. We will get in touch with Groundspeak right away and see what they've got for there. All right, guys. Thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from Cache Advance. Wow, good stuff. I'm sure we're going to come up with some more shows like this because that was a lot of fun. Let's move on. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production, and it is produced by Daryl Wattenberg and Andy Smith. The show is copyright 2014 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.